are listening to Journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth.
Good morning, good evening, and particularly good morning to people in the UK. It's really early morning. It's 1 a.m. And and my guest is from the UK, so thank you very much for staying up so late to come to the show. I want to get straight in there, and my guest tonight is the other day, some of you may have seen my Facebook page, and I got a cat, and she arrived, and like a bolt of lightning, like a super feline, she was running along the wall at 6 feet up in the air. She was levitating, she caused major amounts of chaos in the kitchen, and like. And then eventually she stopped still, sitting on the cupboard, and started going meow, and in this kind of very robotic way. And I thought, oh, I don't know what's going on in this creature's head. I need an animal whisperer. And I was due to have my friend Mick Daly, up on the show tonight when we were going to talk about nutrition and stuff. And for no reason whatsoever, he stepped back. And said, look, my friend Nikki wants to come on the show, and she's an animal whisperer. So thank you for being my manifesting angel, Nikki, and good evening, Nikki Brown.
Good evening, hello, or good morning, shall I say.
Yeah, right. So where are you speaking from? You sound like me.
I'm from Shropshire. Well, I'm living in Shropshire. I'm not really from Shropshire, but that's where I'm currently residing at the moment. But, yeah, I'm born and bred English girl. I was born down in London, and I've lived all over the place, all over the world. So, I just love that when the universe answers your prayers like that. It's great.
Isn't it? So, yeah. Tell us a bit about yourself, because I know less than nothing, apart from I've seen your picture on your website, I see that you use bioresonance, and that's something I'm familiar with, and that you are an animal communicator, and again, I've met a few, I've had a couple on the show, I think it's fascinating, and I've gone from somebody who had no idea that, animals could actually conceive of anything, to somebody who talks to his chickens every day and gets upset when they ignore him, So it's gotten to that. So, tell us how they may relate, bioresonance and, working with animals, speaking with animals. So. Yes. There's plenty of stuff to go with. I won't say Eliza, Nikki Doolittle. not Eliza Doolittle, but not a Dr. Doolittle. But, yes, indeed. So, if you like, could you fill us in on your situation, your story?
Yeah, certainly. Well, I set up Canine Angel. That's my natural health and behavioural practitioner business. I set it up back in 2008, but I've been practicing dog psychology, animal communication, natural healing, pet diet nutrition, all that kind of stuff for about 20 years. And it was something that I kind of fell into, really. It wasn't something I thought, as a little girl, I want to grow up and be an animal whisperer. It just, that's the way things turned out. I basically had a dog, my very first dog at 15 years old. He was a stray dog, little Jack Russell. I actually saved his life because he ran past me, ran out into the road, straight into an oncoming car, and the car slammed his brakes on, wound his windows down and started shouting abuse at me. Can't you keep your effing dog under control? And I was like, it's not my dog. But yes, this little dog came and sat at my feet and looked up at me and was like, wow, you've saved my life. I love you. I'm going to stick by you forever. And I took him home. Well, he followed me home, actually. And really, to cut a long story short, he was perfect around the house, lovely little angel around the house, but putting out in the outside world, and he was the most aggressive little Jack Russell that I'd ever come across. Would attack anything that moved, really. It didn't matter what size dog it was. You know, the St. Bernards and the German Shepherds, and didn't bother him. He just would go for them all. And I didn't really know what I was doing back then, really, when I look at what I know now. Anyway, cut a long story short, my ignorance, I guess, or my uneducation, led to Jake's early death, because one night I let him off the lead. I'd go out, late at night, early in the morning, do all that dog avoiding stuff. And when I was out and there was no dogs around, I'd let him off the lead for a little run. Anyway, he ran off. And he did actually get hit by a car and died in the vets the next day. I was only about 16 and a half, and it turned my world upside down. I thought I was the worst dog owner in the world, about to never get another dog again. But I was born, you know, looking at what I do now, I was born onto planet Earth with a mission, and it was to help animals. So whatever my little belief system was going on at the time, I'm never going to be get another dog or another animal again, was soon put out the window. I started actually studying dog psychology sort of in my early 20s, and I did it for my own personal gratification, really. I thought, if I'm going to get another dog, another animal, I want to know where I went wrong last time, and really how, you know, and understand this species at a deeper level. And I started studying that, and then that just took me on a journey, started volunteering at rescue centres all around the UK. And then that took me off to go and study in rescue centres over in America and New Zealand. And it was sort of in those rescue centres and everything that I'd learning. So I had just a light bulb sort of epiphany moment. I think I was sat in the kennel with a dog one day, and I'd really started communicating them and tuning into them at this point, because I was literally spending so much time, and I would just literally go and sit in the kennels and become one of them all day. I did this for about 5 years. So eventually I kind of just really tuned into them and started communicating with them, getting, you know, sort of visualizations and messages and all sorts of things from them. And they told me where the human race was going wrong with animals, and said, Nikki, you've got to get out there and help these humans. And really bridge the gap between the human being and the animal species, really, because, you know, we've been born on this planet and we've been conditioned to learn the human language. And we don't get taught at school how to talk duck or dog or cat or elephant, or, you know, it's not something we're taught. So, and I often say, you know, the animals have done an amazing job learning the human language. If we could just learn their language a little bit more, we could have more of a two-way conversation, we could prevent problems and sort them out a lot quicker. Because there is a lot of misdiagnosis goes on in the animal world. Which then leads people off down to the wrong treatment or the wrong training. I mean, a prime example of when I was just 15 and I had a very aggressive dog. I went to see the vet and he told me to roll a newspaper up and smack him on the nose. You know, I mean, there's still vets out there today telling people that. So, and the pet shop man said, buy a choke chain, buy a muzzle, you know, choke the hell out of him. That'll sort him out. All these sort of old-fashioned methods of training that humans have been doing with animals for sort of really the last 100 years, you know, all with food treats and rewards and everything, there's a better way, really. And it was what the animals communicated with me. And really they said, you know, Nikki, you need to be a voice for us. You need to be a voice and translate what we're saying to the human race. So that's really kind of what I do now. And obviously with being able to communicate with animals, it helps me identify their problems a lot quicker and more accurately. And obviously you know about bioresonance. I don't know how many of your listeners know about bioresonance. I'm sure we'll talk about that in a moment. But the bioresonance is just a really amazing tool in aiding these animals to rebalance and do their healing. And for me, it's quite good because I kind of now, been doing this so long, I can kind of look at an animal and instantly tell what's wrong with it, and then the bioresonance results kind of confirm that for me. And it just sort of really works very well together, what I do and the bioresonance. I'm all about bringing, the three things I always say to my clients are, when there's an imbalance in your animal or yourself, the three things that we need to look at is there's too much toxicity in the system, not enough minerals, not enough nutrients in the system, and stress. All three will create a depleted immune system. And the immune system is depleted, obviously. That's when troubles, health problems come forward now. I mean, again, a lot of my work is trying to help people understand that behavioural problems are generally symptoms. They're not the cause. And, you know, there's a lot of trainers or behaviourists out there sort of going in and trying to change the animal's behaviour. And, you know, it's my ethic that actually we can't, and we're not, it's not our job, and it's not our right to try and change somebody else's behaviour. All we can do is change our response or our reaction to a particular behaviour, whether it's human or animal. You know, everybody has the right to behave in the way that they want to, but as I say, my education really with my clients is about helping them understand that it's not really the behaviour we've got to change. As I say, that's the symptom. We look at what's the underlying cause, where the imbalance is in the body and the system. Again, you know, we work with the animal as a whole. We work with the mind, the body and the spirit of the animal rather than just the behaviour. So it's really sort of helping people, like I say, sort of get to the bottom and identify. And often that is a huge aha moment for them, because once you understand a problem, you can then find the solutions to fix it. It's the not knowing why your animal's behaving in a certain way or what's really wrong with it. You know, you can go to the vet and you can do some tests and you can still scratch his head and say, I don't really know what's going on. So I think that's, you know, when people have sort of gone down the medical route and they're not getting the answers and solutions, from their protocols, they tend to come and look for more alternative and holistic solutions, and come and find me.
Cool. You know nothing about me either, probably. And,
no, I don't.
I've, been, researching for the last 20 years. Yeah, 21 years. Healing with frequency.
Yes.
And basically everything ties together with frequency, and it's all a fractal. Everything is a fractal. Oh my God. I've had a serious fractal afternoon. This, speaking to somebody who was totally expanding my mind as to the fractal structure of the universe, from femto to the, megas. And it's all, you know, anyway, so I'm completely, my mind looks like one of those, cauliflowers, that, you know, not the cauliflower, is it the cauliflower? The romaine cauliflower?
Cauliflower is good.
Cauliflower. You know, there's this green one that looks like a Mandelbrot. It looks like one of these fractal, it looks like a fractal photo, but it's actually a real growing thing. Just to show how real fractals are. That there's a real thing that grows looking just like a fractal.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
So, a question from Vanessa first. Do you need to be in person or can you work over a phone or the net?
I can work from distance, yes. It does help if I've got a photograph of the animal, especially mm-hmm. with the animal looking into the camera. I can tell a lot by looking into the window of the soul, which is the eyes, but generally I can pick up and tune into animals generally anywhere around the world. Sometimes animals come through to me and talk to me and I have no idea who they are, who they belong to.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, no, I can definitely do it over. Like with frequencies can travel right around the universe. So yes, I work on that energetic level and can help people all around the globe.
So here's the thing. We call animals names. And
yes.
Most of the time, probably the name is completely inappropriate. You know, you might call the dog Rover, but he might call himself, I am, Snarkbark of the dog tribe, Woofy Doo. and I am the great clan leader and, you know, all this stuff. He may have a real ceremonial title.
Mm.
And we call him Rover.
Mm.
You know.
Huge, and there's lots of animals don't like their names.
Yes, and I'm actually wondering if the cat needs to be called by a special name or a special sound, because she's...
Well, I'll tell you a little story, actually. I had some clients contact me about their cat, and I tuned it in, and they called this cat, what was it? Puss Bags. Not even Bagpuss, it was Puss Bags. And I tuned into this cat and he was like a regal god, a lion, you know, he had this energy. And I came back and I said, your cat really, really doesn't like its name. It needs something strong, like bear, or that was the name that came through for me. Like, you know, he's like a bear. He's got huge energy. You're calling him Puss Bags. And they changed his name to Bear, and it had an incredible effect on him. They said, I can't even believe it, but he's just absolutely walking around now. You know, he wouldn't come out, he wouldn't talk to them, he wouldn't play with them, he would just sit there in the corner and do nothing. And as soon as they started calling him Bear, he was walking around, you know, as cats do, like, I now own this place. This place is mine.
So, normal. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So yes, some animals can get very touchy about their names. And again, you know, you can see some people call their dogs Rambo or something, you know, and the dog sort of, you know, becomes a bit aggressive and a bit Rambo-like.
Yeah, exactly.
Labels, I'm always like, if you're going to give a label or a name, let's make sure we give a positive one.
One day, a long time ago, I was in a jam session, and my friend, he was talking about his dog, and he called it Trouble, and he told me what a mess it was. So we started this song called Don't Call Your Dog Trouble, because you're just asking for it, you know, and it was, you know, kind of blues thing, but... That essentially, if you call somebody something all the time, you're invoking that energy. You know, you're like people, you know, to call on the name of the dark one. You know, that's how they do it. They just call it by his name, and they, you know, hello, you called me. So if you call somebody something, and you know, I can't remember, was it, you know, they call the dog Muhammad, so that, you know, they would always say the name, the holy name. So the story that also came out was, and this is a famous one, and you've definitely seen it, and probably people post it on your Facebook page every 2 days, is Anna Breitenbart and Diablo. And it's another story of the same kind of caliber, that they had this, was it a panther? Black? It was a big cat. Mm. A big kind of black, mean-looking cat, and it was only mean because they called it Diablo, and they treated it bad. They called it devil, and so she heard him say, you know, stop calling me that. How are the other cats? And you know, call me spirit or something, you know. He completely changed.
Absolutely, yes. I've watched that video. She's an incredible lady.
Yeah, you can. I just watch it and cry every time.
I think she helped,
you know,
open up people's mind about animal communication, to be honest.
Yeah.
And take it out of the Dr. Dolittle jokey cartoon kind of vibe that it had to, or label that it had to it.
So I'm sure that video opened up so many people's hearts.
I mean, I don't understand really why people have a problem with understanding that. I mean, everybody communicates with animals on some level, whether they're talking in the human language to them or, you know, you know you can think, especially with dog owners, you know, you can think about getting the lead out of the cupboard to take them for a walk, and they're up and they've picked up on your thoughts, they know exactly what's coming, and they're like, I'm ready to go. But like I say, you know, if we can learn their language and study their, I mean, it's called interspecies communication, is the sort of the term or the label for it. And if we can learn interspecies communication with different species, you know, the animals have so much to teach us human beings. They have so many important lessons, and they're just not being listened to. And this is where, obviously, I want to try and do my bit while I'm here on planet Earth to try and bridge that gap between the communication between the two species and help the humans understand some very important, crucial lessons that the animals are reminding us of. It's not even they're teaching us, they're reminding us, because animals remind us to connect to nature, to Mother Nature, to Gaia, to the energy. And they take us away from laptops and devices and technology, and, you know, and they do take us back to nature. So I think they're incredibly, incredibly important, and we need to be listening to them a little bit more.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. back to the chat room. I don't know if you want to join us in the chat room at either Wolf Spirit Radio or freedomslips.com, revolutionradio.co, any one of those. But there's stuff going on. So Vanessa's saying, don't call the dog Tom, and don't call the cat Casper. And I replied, my next door neighbor's cat is called Casper. And she said, my friend named the cat Casper, and now it got run over, so now it's a ghost.
Oh, I shouldn't laugh.
I know, but it's ironic, and we like a bit of irony here.
We do.
It helps to break the searing pain of seeing reality as it is. Anyhow, so, Vanessa was also saying, do you do only household pets or farm animals, or do you work with wild animals?
I predominantly have been working with the pet animals for the last 20 years, but I have worked with horses, I have worked with cows, I've worked with all animals. I haven't worked with, I've worked with, actually, I've communicated with like Cecil Spirit and Hamby's Spirit, you know, the bigger animals. They're out there sending communications to me, and in fact the farm animals are absolutely screaming at me at the moment. They need help. They need serious help. So hence why I'm actually sort of looking into cracking open the farm market with our fulvic acid solution. Which is part of my natural protocol, which I've been using on the cats and the dogs and the small animals. But yeah, the farm animals are absolutely crying out for help at the moment. They are really, really suffering. And I mean, as we know, we see the abuse videos on Facebook and stuff, but it goes a little bit deeper into that really, because one of the biggest, problems that these animals have, whether it be sheep, pigs, cows, horses, is this laminitis, this foot rot. And they're basically, because they're stood in their own mess all day, and then the farm cleaning companies come in and spray the farm, you know, their bedding, everything with horrendous chemicals. They're pumped full of obviously antibiotics, vaccines, steroids, painkillers, all sorts of horrendous drugs to try and treat the laminitis, but it doesn't work. They dip their feet in really harsh chemicals, and the lives of these animals, they are really, really suffering, you know, and it's, I'm looking at every solution I can to get out there and help these big animals while they're alive here on planet Earth, because they really are suffering. And, you know, I'm very tuned into the sea creatures as well, dolphins, whales, seals, you know, the ocean creatures are all going mental as well with the amount of pollution and crap that's going into their environment. So yeah, really on all levels, all animals. I even communicate with insects as well, believe it or not. People find this fascinating, but I can move a wasp's nest or an ant's nest. I can move it along through using telepathic communication with them. They're actually very, very intelligent, the insects. And when I teach people how to start tuning into the animals, that's actually the first place I start, is with the really little creatures on the planet, because they are actually really highly tuned into the vibrations and frequencies. And it's quite incredible. That's where I started learning. I'll tell you a story, actually, because this is quite funny. This was 15 years ago. I was living in a very old cottage in South Birmingham with my partner. It's sort of a 400-year-old cottage, and every year we would get ants all around our kitchen, all in our kitchen cupboards. And at the time, we were putting down those little poisonous ant traps, and I was just saying to my partner, I can't do this. And he was like, well, what else are we going to do? We can't get rid of these ants. And I said, well, look, the ant traps and the poison aren't actually working because they keep returning back anyway. I said, but I'm going to try. This is before I'd even really started, you know, communicating with animals. I said, I'm going to try and move the ant's nest. And he was like, well, good luck with that. And I went in and did my work, visualization, tuned in meditation, and I tuned into the queen ant and basically sent her some telepathic messages and said, you know, sort of showed her pictures of us putting the ant poison down and her ants carrying the poison back to the nest. And I said, look, you know, we've got to do a bit of negotiating here, you know. I know you were probably here way before us, but we can't have you in the kitchen. And I said to her, do you think you could move your nest down the bottom of the garden? There's a beautiful apple tree down there, plenty of food for you, plenty of shelter and safety. If you could move your nest down there, we'll all be happy. And the very next morning, my partner came upstairs with a cup of tea and woke me up. And he said, what have you done? And I said, why? He said, there are no ants in the kitchen. They are all gone. And they never ever returned again. And I think that was the moment I was just sort of like, wow, did that really work? Even across in America, I've helped people move their insect nests as well without having to get pest control in. So, it's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating stuff.
Fascinating.
Indeed it is. We have questions, but on the Evil Spirit staff, one of our moderators and forum administrator, Vanessa, she's just rescued a baby raccoon who they called Lucky. but she's a little orphan baby raccoon. So, yeah, we're all about that stuff here. I don't know what's happening on, I'm going to have to check the Revolution Radio chat room and see if anything's going on there. They're talking about, electronics. No. Maybe not down there. Anybody on the Revolution Radio? Got anything? Anyway, how long have you been, when was the ant incident? How long ago was that?
As I say, that was probably about 12, 13 years ago now.
All right. So, and do you find that you're, more and more finely tuned, until it's almost like the sense of touch and smell?
Yes, I mean,
you can take it for granted almost.
Yes, yeah. Well, I'm getting there. Mm-hmm. Like any spiritual practice, it's an art and it needs to be practiced and kept up. It's like a muscle, really. You need to keep exercising it to keep it going. But yeah, I've definitely just, I think as well, sort of going through, you know, we're all sort of going through this ascension and energies and all sorts of changes going on at the moment, and I seem to have become extremely, extremely sensitive. I mean, another thing that I did, I'd always been I turned vegetarian when I was 8 years old. Just eating animals didn't sit with me, even at a very young age. And I only actually finally went vegan 4 months ago. All I was eating was eggs and butter, and I'd cut out everything else, but I was loving my eggs and butter on toast. And funny enough, I had bioresonance test, and it picked up I was intolerant to egg whites. And I thought, well, okay, you know, my body doesn't need this anymore. So, and since I've actually cut all the animal products out of my system, I have, it's really tripled my sensitivity to picking up things from all different dimensions and different things going on. So yeah, I'm getting sort of all different new levels of communication coming through, which I'm sort of sitting there and studying and trying to work out myself as well. So, what's that talking to me now?
Exactly. And well, this is my experience is not quite as deeply into it as you are, but you know, I've got these four chickens, right? I talk about my chickens on my show all the time. You know, we were talking about names earlier, and I was kind of jokingly, you know, sort of talking about this, you know, what a dog might call itself. I was sitting by, standing by my coop a few weeks back, and just looking at this bird, and she was sitting in the box. She's been sitting in the box for like 4 days now. She's in a real mood, brood, and like, I thought, oh, silly cow, and like, and I was kind of having this kind of, yeah, stupid cow sort of feeling to me, you know, and I got back this wave of, you know, you don't know who you're talking to. You're talking to royalty. In our world, we regard the hen as the queen, the source of all life. You know, and you just treat me like this, and like she was giving me that, and I was thinking, actually, yeah, all right, I'm sorry. And so I'm treated with a lot more, with a different attitude these days. And I still think of all these billions of chicks on these conveyor belts going into this mincing machine and sound like the terrible death for them all. And yet, in their own mind, they're royalty.
Absolutely. Well, every single soul on this planet is equal and has the right to be here. That's just simply how it is, you know. And life on planet Earth is about life and then death. But for me, it's all about the quality of life that each soul has before they die. I think that's very important. I don't think we're going to, you know, it's part of life. The animals, they kill each other and eat each other because they're hungry and because they've got a need to survive and live. And I don't expect the whole of planet Earth to go vegan. That's not going to happen. That would actually sort of put things out of balance too much as well. But, you know, we've got into such a state of out of balance with too many animals being consumed. You know, when there's too much of anything, everything goes out of balance. So, yeah, it's all for me about, I mean, obviously, you know, whether you, it's the same with plants as well, even when you're a vegan or a vegetarian, you know, how the plant has lived throughout its life, that energy is going to go into your body. And if people out there are eating factory farm animals or animals that have gone through tremendous trauma while they've been alive, all that energy is going to be transferred back into the system when it's eaten. So for me to be able to get the animals healthy, it's going to have a knock-on effect, obviously, for us humans as well.
Oh, absolutely. Well, And it goes even further because we go to the plants and we look at the experiments of Dr. Clive Baxter, who was the original, he was the guy who did the rubber plant thing. the lie detector thing, and he wired up a lie detector to the plant, and he thought, how can I make this plant react? I know, I'll hurt it. And he, you know, just went, reached over and got a pair of scissors. And as he reached over, the plant, flickered the thing on the thing, on the polygraph. It reacted before he even did anything to it. Mm. And then there was this other guy, right? So that's the famous one, right? But then other little famous, non-famous nuggets, about, Khalid Baxter is that, there was another guy walks in and, he just walks in from, into the office and the plant goes absolutely bananas. He's just screaming and, and he said, what have you been doing? He said, you know, I've just been mowing the lawn. Like this guy was to the plant was a mass murderer.
Yes, yes.
He's been mowing the lawn. And, but here's the kicker. And this is the really, really brilliant one. Is that there was this other guy who came with a sandwich and he had lettuce in the sandwich and he bit into the lettuce and the plant screamed. And then, I don't know who suggested it, he thanked the food and he bit into the lettuce and it didn't scream.
Yes.
And then they discovered that if you thank the food, it doesn't scream.
Yes.
So I'm going around my garden with the razor blade going, thank you, clip, thank you, clip, thank you.
I had to prune my tree the other day and I was just like, I'm so sorry, tree, I'm so, so sorry, I'm hurting you, I'm so sorry. It's quite crazy.
I know, it can get a bit much though, can't it? And don't you think it's a bit much when you start apologising for the grass for cutting it, you know?
Yes.
It's just like, come on.
I keep reminding myself it's just like cutting our hair or our nails.
But
there's some tribes out there who won't cut their hair because they believe the same thing.
That's right. That, you know, you're destroying the antenna to the radiation of God. So, you know, and you know what? All these people say, "Oh, you got to cut your grass. Your grass isn't, you know, it's too long, and you know, you mustn't do this." You should have seen my garden. In fact, my garden and my beard over the last 2 weeks have just kind of sprung right out. Well, it's spring here right now. today in Scotland is spring. Because it's about
it's
that
summer.
Long.
Not
yeah.
summer, you've gone into spring, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we you know, it's only just stopped snowing. Well, you know, everything goes completely crazy. We have all these fertility festivals, because people think that that's what makes it go fertile, but it's, you know, it would happen anyway. But, my beard is now, I think it's about an inch and a half long now. It's only ridiculously crazy long. And the grass is up to my waist, and it's ridiculously crazy long, and it's just been a couple of weeks. So anyway, long story, but basically,
you measure the grass and measure your beard.
Yes, I'm still reticent to cut the grass, is what I'm saying, because things are getting too conscious. I'm starting to receive consciousness signals from everything, when you start talking to things, your reality starts shifting into a very different zone. And some people might want to call a number and send some people with white coats.
Yes.
Yeah. But I used to talk to computers. People talk to their computers all the time, don't they? I bet people talk to their smartphones and give them names.
Exactly. You know, why can't we talk to the grass or the daisies or the bees or the ants or the clouds? Or why can't we talk to them as well?
Well, there's also in Scotland, are you aware of the summer delight, the midgie?
Yes.
Again my audience have suffered along with me the treachery of the midgie. But now when I see a midgie, and there's always, it just takes one midgie in a room to make the entire evening hell, where you can't feel it because it anesthetizes your skin when it injects itself.
Yes.
And you only feel it about like a minute later after it's gone, you know, it's like far too late. And then you feel this kind of crawling sensation and think, oh, there it is, I'm going to slap it and I'll kill it. No, it's gone. It's already gone before you can feel it, you know.
Yeah.
By the time you feel it, it's long away. It's a real sneak little bugger. Anyway, when I see, because sometimes I'll see one just kind of buzzing away between me and my screen. I can see it outlined against the screen. And I try to say to it, I try so hard to be jolly with it and say, oh, have you come to play? And that actually kind of stops insects biting.
Yeah.
So rather having a kind of aggressive attitude towards it, ah, oh, little bastard, I'll kill you, is like, oh, you come to play. Kind of, I'm faking it, but it seems to work. You know, I'm kind of faking the vibrational attitude of, oh, I'm really pleased to see you. Do you want to come and play with us?
I don't think you're faking it. I think you're doing it.
Uh-huh.
I think you're actually doing it. That is all you need to do, really, is change your thinking and your vibration around these animals and insects. And sometimes when they do bite you, or if I, you know, when you're sort of walking through the forest or whatever and you get stung by some nettles, I always see Mother Nature's just giving us a little wake-up call. We're probably walking around in some daydream thinking some negative stuff, and you know, she's got some things out there that can poke us and prod us and wake us up and go, ow, oh yeah, and sort of bring us back into reality.
So. Burberries.
I've got an interesting one.
Do you know what a burberry is?
A burberry?
Yeah, a burberry bush.
A burberry bush.
It has inch and a half long hypodermic needle-like spines.
Yes.
And they go straight through crocs. I'll have you know.
Yes.
I learned that the hard way. They go straight through it like a razor, like a, what do they call that, a katana.
Yeah. I mean, they were built with these protective things, these plants, because they're alive and they have a soul and they have a life, so they've been given these little protective. Mm.
So what I did with the Burberry plant is I said, no spines below eye level. Sorry again. No spines below eye level, please.
Yes.
So I've kind of pruned it, and so because you know the bees love it, and so I didn't want to deprive the bees of a good food source, but I just said like, I don't want people walking into you. You know, you're dangerous. You have to understand this. So I might even plant some other plant kind of around it. Something just like, because it's you know, like I said, they're inch and a half, it's covered with inch and a half long hypodermic needles that will go through leather.
Yes. Yeah.
And rubber, you know, and you know, just about any material except from steel. Anyway, meanwhile, back at stately Wayne Manor. So yeah, all right, okay. Here's something from Murfling. Okay, I haven't read it, so I don't know where it's going. Sadly, I carried a fox from middle of road to wooded area, picked a flower from mum's rose bush, placed it on beautiful, then communicated to the creatures, trees and breeze and thee, please, 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 when you hear the man machine, please don't cross, etc. And since that time, seems more creatures are allowing me to see them even closer than before, like a dust bath for a rabbit. Birds seem to be alighting on things so close to allow me to see them. So, people are getting closer to their ability to communicate with animals, definitely.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely, definitely, yeah. And more and more people are sort of wanting to learn, I think, and not thinking, oh, you know, that's just for Dr. Doolittle, that. It's for the gifted, because it's not just for the gifted, as say, we can all do it. It's just whether, you know, like anything, whether you're interested in learning how to do something. If you're not interested in talking to animals, then you're not gonna bother, are you? there's some people on the planet who like to go and kill animals and shoot them and hunt them and have no, you know, no regard or no interest in even talking to animals. But those people that actually really, really love animals, they are definitely, I think, noticing now, and hearing them a lot more. I mean, you've only got to look at how things have changed really in just the last 5 years, I would say. You know, I remember as a child going to zoos and being taken to zoos. I never actually, I went to a couple of circuses with animals when I was a child. I remember I've got a photo of me holding a little baby lion cub, and we've all been to the zoo. And I think now, you know, and these sea life parks, you know, where they've had great big orcas stuck in swimming tanks. I mean, where did we actually think that it was all okay to do that, you know? Because my brain is now, I was never comfortable as a child seeing animals behind bars, ever. And I think a lot of people, when they do go to the zoo, you know, there's better zoos out there than some. But I think we all come away with a slight feeling of like, oh, that animal's just stuck in there all day. That's not really a life for it. But I think, you know, with this new level of consciousness, we're starting to really think about actually why have we got animals in zoos? Well, do we need them in zoos? Do we need them in swimming pools? Do we, you know, to actually learn and be educated from them? As I've always said, you know, you're never going to learn the natural behaviours and natural instincts of an animal when it's in a enclosed humanised environment. It's not going to show its natural behaviours. You're far better if you can't get out and afford to go on wild safari or go and swim with the dolphins or anything like that, then you're actually far better to watch a really good documentary where someone's gone out and filmed all these natural behaviours to learn about them than you are from the zoo, you know. And I've just got to, again, all the zoo animals and animals behind the bars have had enough. They've had enough. They've said, look, you know, we're not your slaves. You're earning money out of us sitting here doing bugger all day and boredom, and, you know, people are making money out of that, and that is slavery, really. You know, and then I get people saying, oh, what about conservation and these conservation projects? And don't get me wrong, there's some really good rescued wildlife sanctuaries out there who are doing some amazing work. But these city zoos, they're not needed. They're just really, really not needed. We've got a place down here in Staffordshire called Monkey Forest, and all the monkeys are allowed to swing around the trees in the forest, and, oh, that's my dog. And you're not, you go and sort of mingle with these monkeys, and they'll call some, can sort of sit down on the grass beside you and stuff, but you're not actually allowed to interact with them and touch them. You've got sort of staff around the place that are guiding the people, but they do brilliant. You know, the animals are roaming free. And they are doing a breeding program a rescue and release program to release these monkeys back into the wild. So those kind of animal places that I really support, but, you know, places like SeaWorld and that, where they're just making a shed load of money out of making animals perform and do tricks. It's just not on. It's got to change. And I think that we are seeing a big, big change in the way people are thinking about actually, do I want to teach my child that, you know, we're going to go and see an animal behind bars? Is that really the thing to do? So yeah, it's going to take time to change, because these systems, these protocols have been in place for many, many years. But as the consciousness, collective consciousness grows, I think we're all saying we want to see animals in their natural habitat. We want to protect the habitat. We want to protect the animals, you know. That's where our conservation should be, not putting money into a zoo to try and preserve species inside a zoo. We should be putting our money into preserving the habitat around the world, you know, and do our little bit to try and preserve and help Mother Earth thrive. But yeah, I mean, this is sort of all what the animals are sort of saying to me. They are very fed up.
That's a very interesting thing about zoos, is because they started out as the collections, the live collections of these, reptilian overlords, so-called nobility, you know, basically slave masters, in other words. And so their idea of other living creatures as just things that they can put in boxes and maybe even charge other people for the privilege of seeing them. Mm. And, you know, the whole idea, all of, you know, it's wrong on so many levels. So many levels. We can see now how it was wrong. When I was a kid, oh, the zoo, that's a great place. I can see animals, because I was a city kid.
Yeah.
You know, I've never saw anything like lions or tigers or reptiles or stick insects or elephants and giraffes and all that stuff. But I could at London Zoo. And so that gave me exposure to these creatures, because otherwise I was looking at Alsatians and concrete. And I'm not going to use the word, but F-wits with Alsatians. And now they have pit bulls and other things. You know, there's always one group who abuses their creatures as well, you know, to make them mean. Animals aren't mean. They do what's necessary.
Mm.
You know,
it's human interference that has made them mean.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, a lot of my work involves educating people, especially with the domesticated pets. You know, for 100 years, we've all been brainwashed into buying processed pet food. Now, the domesticated dog has been around for at least 15,000 years. The earliest remains of a dog buried with a man that they found was in a German burial site. 15,000 years it dated back to, so. I mean, they date back even further than that, but that's as far back as the evidence we've got that man and dog were domesticated, or were partners together. And processed pet food has only been around for 100 years, so what were we feeding our domesticated pets before? And it's only now we're seeing the huge consequences of taking our cats and our dogs off their species appropriate diets and providing them with human cooked food, because the human being is the only species on the planet that I know of that builds a fire to cook their food. Every other species eats each other raw. And that's how they've been designed to process food and eat food. And I often say to people, you know, if you look at the koala bear, his species appropriate diet is eucalyptus leaves. If you gave koala bear tin of whiskers or tin of pedigree chum every day for its life, don't you think it would suffer in some way psychologically and health-wise? And this is where we see mass advertising, mass brainwashing, you know, going on all over the planet with all sorts of things. But one of my passion things is when we put an animal back onto its species appropriate diet, everything returns back to balance for that animal. Psychologically, mentally, and physically. And our cats and dogs are carnivores. Unfortunately, the pet food industry work with the veterinary association, who work with the pharmaceutical industry, who work with the insurance companies, and all four companies making billions and billions of pounds out of making animals sick so they can create lifelong customers in the pharmaceutical industry. And I say, you know, when we take out the first part of that equation and we take out the pet food, the processed pet food, and put our animals back onto a species appropriate diet, they don't need to go and see the vet, they don't need pharmaceutical drugs, they don't need vaccines, they don't need anything, they don't, you know, your pet insurance costs come down. And not only that, you know, it's a bit like if you put petrol into a diesel car, your car's going to go in the garage because you put the wrong fuel into the engine. It's the same with cats and dogs. You keep putting the wrong fuel inside of them, and they have eventually their health or their behaviour is going to break down. And it's got so bad, actually, that, you know, when this dried food or this processed cooked food goes into the pet system and their digestive enzymes are designed to break down raw food only, the pancreas, the liver, and the kidneys all are put under extreme strain, and we are seeing animals, dogs and cats, dying at the average age of around 12, and most of them are dying through organ failure. Now, raw-fed, carnivore, wild carnivore, should we say, can live up into their 20s. So we're actually halving the lifespan of our animals by providing them this processed pet food, pouring it into their bowl twice a day for the rest of their life. I mean, the damage that we're doing to them is incredible. And yet so many people have not even thought about it. They may even be looking at their own food and their own healthy diets, but they've just put their trust into the pet food companies and the veterinary associations, you know, the vets. But when a vet goes to vet school, they get about half a day's nutrition training, and the education is provided by the pet food companies. And these pet food companies actually test their foods on animals in laboratories. How much of our food can we give this animal before it has a heart attack? How much food of this can we give it before it gets cancer? How much food of this food can we get it before it gets these things? So these pet food companies that are all promoting We Care and We Love About Your Pets, yeah, it's the biggest scam, con, lie that's going on in the pet world. And that's, you know, I've written a book about it. It's called What Your Dog Is Begging For, Raw Meaty Bones, Your Dog's Best Friend. And it's a training guide, really, of how to switch your addicted pet, because it's going to probably be addicted to the processed pet foods, because there's so many sugars and chemicals and preservatives in these foods that the animals get addicted to it. And how to cleanse, detox, fast all that crap out of their system and get them put back onto their raw species appropriate diet, which, as I say, if you look at a cat or a dog, open its mouth, it's been given a set of teeth to do the job, it's given a set of claws to pull down an animal.
Mm-hmm.
Its fangs would pierce the artery in the neck to kill the animal or the heart. And then they've got the front teeth, which are flat like scissors, to tear open the skin, and then they've got incredibly strong molars and back jaws that can punch through bone.
Yeah. So listen, Nikki, we're just about up against a hard break.
Okay.
So we got about 4 minutes where people shout at you, so you can turn your thing down a little bit go and refresh your cup of tea and or your coffee, whatever you're using to keep awake. And we'll be back. There it is. There's the music break. And don't go away. And we'll be talking to the animals with Nikki Brown. Thank you very much.
Thank you. See you soon.
Your host.
And finally, we return to Journeys Back on the Road. The rubber has hit the road. The road is rolling beneath us. On this journey today, with me is Nikki Brown.
Hi.
Animal communicator.
Hello.
Sorry, interspecies communicator. Oh, animal dog whisperer sounds much better. You are the UK dog whisperer, it says here.
That's the one.
That's your website. Say again?
Yeah, so you can call me whatever you like, really.
Maybe I'll call you with this telepathic symbol. Hang on. How about that? Good radio, huh? Anyway.
Yeah,
I'm actually getting a kind of greeny, lilac-y, kind of minty green. Yeah. Interesting. I don't normally get colours, colourblind, especially green, so that's pretty significant. Anyhow, so, Nikki, right, so we got to the point that we've got, in my room tonight, I've got a single midgie, a single moth, and a spider just came down the screen. And I see them lit up sort of, behind the screen, so they silhouette. And it's like they're all here and they're all kind of listening to you. So it's quite interesting.
I sent the spider to sort the midgie out for you.
Did you? Thank you.
That's I was actually going to say, probably about 5 minutes ago, I've got a spider up in the corner of my room, and I generally leave my spiders around because they keep the fly population down for me, and I don't have to obviously use chemicals around the house to get rid of pests or do it, you know, or even telepathically communicate. But this spider has given birth to about 50 babies.
Oh my God. No, that's the nightmare of the black pulsating thing that you think, what's that? And then you realize it's, oh my God, what are those all kind of creepy, crawly, creepy, crawly, crawly, creepy, Boris the spider times 50. That's a small batch, isn't it?
Tiny, tiny, tiny little babies. And I was like, well, okay, I'm going to have to do some talking to them. But I actually had a little chat with them and I decided they could stay. I just said, you just do what you just do your thing and keep the flies and the wasps and all that out and you can stay. So goodness knows what I'm going to have in a couple of weeks.
Spiders have a peculiar consciousness, don't they? You know, they know that you're looking at them. You see a spider at the corner of your eye, and it's going, hilly birdy, hilly birdy, hilly birdy, you know, with its 8 legs, hilly birdy, hilly birdy, hilly birdy, hilly birdy. And then you look at it, and it stops dead.
Yeah.
And you think, did that spider just stop because I looked at you? And the spider says, yeah.
Yes, yes.
What do you want? Yeah. They have a very peculiar attitude. What's your feel from the spider? What's their medicine,
or their message?
Mm.
I always see them as a really good sign of luck. They kind of bring a message that something has landed on your web. And something good usually, because, you know, spiders build their webs and they catch their food that way, so they catch their prize. And generally when a spider sort of comes and visits you, he's kind of giving you a message that something good's on its way to you. It's landed on your web and it's coming towards you. So that's generally, you know, I try and look at the positive message that all our animals bring to us.
So I should check my website.
About that.
So if I see a spider, I should check my website and improve my website or something.
Yes. Well, you know, maybe, who knows what the gift is that's coming to you, or the reward or the prize, but there's something usually coming. And that's kind of what I try and do when people have sort of, you know, got the fear of spiders and stuff. And then there's obviously millions of different species of spiders, and some of them are a bit friendlier than others. Some of them eat their husbands, so they've mated with them.
I do have a problem. I mean, it's like, you know, having a problem with Nazis who kill people. I do have a problem with the whole female eating the male bit. Just as an aside, generally, you know. Some people try to persuade me other, oh, don't worry, it's fine, you know. Apparently, male mantids can only have sex if they've had their head nipped off.
Right.
Great.
Great.
No, anyway, look, you know, we could go into, I've often wondered, any comedians ever sort of approach these kind of bizarre, actually, you know, there is someone, and that's Gary Larson.
Yes.
The Far Side. I bet you love The Far Side. I love The Far
Side. Yes, yes, I do. Yes, yeah. Well, animals are very comical, aren't they, in their own right? They always make you smile and laugh.
Yeah,
always.
Especially so, beagles. Like, you know, sorry? Snoopy. You know Snoopy is a beagle.
Yes.
I used to have a girlfriend. She was a dog shower, and she had two kinds of dogs. One was an Irish wolfhound, and the other was a beagle. And, you know, you couldn't get two different characters. You know, this big kind of lumbering, gentle giant. Hairy. And this lightning bolt with legs and ears and just every thing everywhere and mess and smell. And, you know, you have to keep them in outside. You know, stay outside, you stinky little thing. And then, no, I don't even want to go into what the thing did. But anyway, so... Where was I? Yes, beagles. And the character of these things, they definitely did things for laughs. I'm not kidding. And this creature, I made her a kennel because she was just gorgeous. She was just lush. She was a velvet poppy. Oh man, cute. You couldn't, anyway. So I built her a little kennel and she literally did what Snoopy does. She sat on the ridge of the roof. She sat, you know, laid with her head, you know, laid on the back, and she did exactly what Snoopy does. So
wow, that's amazing. It's funny how when you actually, you know, you build a dog home and they don't go in it. They're like, no, I like the big house that you live in.
No, she really, because otherwise it was the It was the pup's house. It was she had a special sort of puppy zone to protect her from the other the other bitches in the zone. Because most of them were females anyway, so I just made her this little house, and she loved it. She really loved it, and I put little shelves in it, because I know that they like to get up. They're kind of like cats in a way, you know, beagles. They climb up things rather than, a lot of dogs don't. I suppose little dogs do. They learn to climb up things.
Yes, little dogs, big dogs climbing, yeah.
So, meanwhile. There we go. Meanwhile, I'm going to bring in some other, oh, yes, actually, we need to bring in our friend.
Yes.
Yes, where is he? Michael Daly.
Michael.
Indeed, bring him in. Look at that. Yes, handsome man. Isn't he a handsome man?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you know, I met Mick, when I was with the dog show girlfriend, she was also a singer. And, we performed music together because I'm a guitar player. And,
Hello,
Mike. Michael. Mick. Hello. Mick Daly. I was just about to say that, I met you through Maria. Maria Hall, and we used to play your gig. You put up a gig, down in Paisley in Glasgow, and we used to drive down there. 5 hours it took us to drive down there. It was exhausting. And we really enjoyed the gig. It was a really great one. And I actually played two tracks last night from that gig. Home to the Highlands and Keep Away. Do you remember the one I used to do that had this sweeping sound, this synthesizer-like sound?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that sounded like the X-Files theme and stuff like that. Yeah, so there you go. So Mick, we've been talking for the last hour about animal communication, but there are other bows and other strings, and you know, how did this message, because, you know, you did the job of an angel. I asked for an animal whisperer last week when this cat arrived, and I'm trying to understand what this creature's about. And, you know, you step back and say, look, here's my friend Nikki. She's an animal whisperer. I was like, oh wow, thank you, universe, and thank you, Mick. So, why don't you introduce yourself and see where you fit in with this puzzle, because we're all interested in subjects that all tie together in this grand way.
Okay, now, well, hello, I'm Mike Daly. I'm a naturopath, and I've known you for quite some time, Jeremy, and I met Nikki, it was online. Basically because I actually got into bioresonance. I had trained in bioresonance in Spain under a doctor, Machi Manu, who, you know, he basically kind of took me under his wing, really. When I was looking for the answers to health, because I mean, you remember, Jeremy, when I was diagnosed with cancer years ago. And I decided to go against the whole allopathic methods of chemo and radiation. So I then went all natural, I even took your advice and started listening to a lot of frequencies and all the different frequencies. And so I started to look deep into it. I went to study in Spain and and basically, it just went on from there. I started working with a woman nearby, Karen, who had the Energy Nano machine. And we worked well together, but we decided to kind of go in a sort of separate ways because I was wanting to look more into the, to natural plant supplements. As well as doing bioresonance, and Karen was going down, you know, another route. So, still good friends, but we went a different route. But I'd met Nicky, basically online, and it was basically through the, you know, supplementation. And we were obviously looking at the, Nicky is doing a lot of great work with the Fulvi Vitality. And as you said earlier on, you know, the animals are screaming at her, right? As particularly the farm animals. And it's pretty much for myself, it's at what a lot of studies have shown, and you'll be aware that most chronic disease is actually mineral deficiencies. And the soil is deficient in minerals. And that is why the animals and people are actually, we're mineral deficient, you know, with the soil all depleted as well. Now we've got, we always look at the allopaths. The allopaths will tell us, you know, take this drug, take that drug, and take another, a drug to counteract the side effects, or should I say direct effects, of a drug that they've taken. And it's just an ongoing thing. Nicky had said earlier on, for the past 100 years, dogs have, and the pharmaceutical industry and the pet food industry, they've done the same to humans. So Nicky and I basically work, I work for the humans, Nicky works for the animals, and helps the humans too with their animals, you know. So that's basically how we had got together.
Excellent, sir. The whole idea we've all approached, you know, what happened with me is I had a big bike crash 30 years ago, and so learning how to heal myself, not only like using, you know, surgery, like sewing me back together and stuff, but I was also had this nerve issue. So I went to a faith healer, and that's what took me into the whole woo-woo world, because before that I was real hard-nosed, you know, I didn't believe in anything. And it completely cracked my consciousness open. Especially like 10 seconds after this guy's taken this pain away that was like killing me. His wife comes up to me and says, oh yes, I'm a seer, you know, and I can see, and you can do this too. And I was like, yeah, right. like 10 minutes ago, I was an art skeptic, and now I'm being told that I can do this. And it turns out I can do this and more.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even need to touch anybody. I don't even need to be in the same room. That's insane. That's when it gets insane. You know, it's like, I'm affecting something at a distance with the consciousness of my mind and my feelings moving together. And with the acceptance of another person, their reality is shifting into a way that is a more perfect form just through the use, well, not just through, but through the use of focused concentration without having to be there. Now, what are the implications of that for, you know, traveling doctors? Oh, we'll lose our jobs. Well, yeah. Great. But, you know, there's still room for people. And here's the thing about healers. The reason people get better because they go to a homeopathic healer is because they're actually listened to. For the first time in their life, somebody with some sense of ability to make a change in their life is actually listening to them.
Yeah.
And here's where Nikki comes in, because what she's doing is representing those who have no voice.
Yeah.
I just had a little emotional well up there, because that is a really, you know, a very, very key thing. Nikki, please.
It is. excuse me. I'm just saying here because, Mike and I have actually, even though we've only met, a year, maybe 2 years ago, we've had a very similar journey. I mean, I had stage 4 cervical cancer when I was 23, and that was my thing that cracked open my consciousness, and I healed it, completely naturally. Through diet, but I did a very, very powerful visualization meditation, and when I went to see my gynaecologist, I mean, he'd been a gynaecologist 28 years, and he said to me he'd never seen such incredible healing in his whole 28 years of work. And he said, what have you done? What is your secret? And I put it down to, because it was at the point where I realized that the, you know, if the mind can create disease within the body, the mind has the power to heal it. And the mind is our most powerful tool, and that is what I teach all of my clients. You know, I'm dog trainers, dog behaviorists, whatever, they might work with food, or animal trainers will work with food to get the animal to do a behavior or a trick or a something, you know. And I teach my clients how to use their mind to be able to communicate and ask and respond to this other soul or this other entity's energy.
Mm-hmm.
And the mind, but what you're saying about listening, you know, yes, the holistic alternative field, yes, we the first place we do is we listen, because we're all about working, identifying the cause, rather than the allopathic theory, as I keep saying, we'll just manage and treat symptoms.
Yeah.
And it's no different if, you know, if you've got a leak and leaks into your basement, your wall is going to get mouldy. And if you just paint over the mould and treat the mould,
yeah,
don't fix the leak, it's going to come back. Yeah. And that's really what the allopathic system is like. It's just treating mold, painting over the mold, never fixing the leak, you know, so we get these recurring health problems. And when we can actually learn to use the mind, you know, everything has to start with a change of thought. Everything starts with thought. You know, your thoughts produce your feelings produce your actions produce your results. And if you want different results, you've got to change your thinking. And that's really where it's all about. It's helping people learn to use the power of their mind. It's an incredibly powerful tool, and we're not using it to our best advantage, or it's been so brainwashed, I don't know.
Well, it's very interesting you use the word tool, that yeah, the mind is a tool, that it's not the master.
No,
it's
the master.
It's the laptop. It's the bloody laptop, and the laptop thinks that it's the CEO. Whereas, as you correctly say, Mick, because it comes through the heart. Even the heart is not the boss. The heart is the communication for the soul,
mm-hmm,
which comes from a sort of an extra dimensional place, which is kind of, it's like it's in a sphere that encircles the body. Long story. Anyway, this is great that we're able to see now. Bioresonance,
yeah,
is about frequency.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, I've experienced bioresonance. I've you know, laid on a table holding these electrodes. My friend waves this kind of wibbly wand. They have a wibbly wand. It's got this, yeah, piece of wire, and it wibbles at the end. There's a little at the end, and it kind of bounces up and down. It's a sort of dowsing tool, a sort of vibrational amplifier thing. And you can fill it with frequencies and point it at the body and use it as an antenna as well. But it essentially is using megahertz and multi-band megahertz frequencies. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, it is.
And is it programmed in, I mean, how many frequencies can it do at the same time? Do you know that?
It depends on the machine. I mean, the machines out there that are sort of so advanced, but I mean, I don't know if you've heard of the one called the Spooky 2.
Spooky 2! Spooky 2!
This is one that uses a lot of the Rife frequencies, right? Now, what you can do is, with, you know, with many machines, there's so many frequencies in it, and what you can do is you can program once we actually do a full body scan, all the frequencies will come up, and it goes into, it's loaded, the program actually loads it into a laser pen, right? And we actually, you know, just go over the meridians of the body with the laser, so the frequencies will change from time to time, right?
Oh, I see, so it modulates the laser beam with yes, the exactly. Multiband frequencies. I see.
Exactly.
I've designed a device. Made a device. Yes, Captain. Yes. that does the same thing. It pulses a laser with frequencies that are in the acoustic range. And yeah, so yeah. You're talking about. So these fellows are going in the. Oh, she's done another one. Oh, sorry. You know how these things go directly to the brain. You know, you might be talking, and suddenly this waft comes in through the left nostril, up into the brain, and then kind of down out through the right nostril, and thinking, I'm trying to concentrate, and this overwhelming smell is just, yeah. Where was I? See?
Right, you were talking about the frequencies that you've developed a machine.
Yeah, yeah, so I've got this device that, it's got a variable frequency, but it's also got programmable frequencies to pulse lasers. And also it does these sunglasses. You know, I've got a pair of sunglasses that has lights that flash onto your eyelids. This was a popular thing in the 80s. What they call them, the dream machine. You used to have them at raves, and you'd play these pulsing lights onto your... And it's very much like when you rub your eyes. You know when you rub your eyes, you get these lovely patterns.
Yep.
I remember those.
Yes. Well, you can still do them.
There was days sitting in school when you're daydreaming and you would stick your knuckles into your eyes.
Ah,
and
I love a bit of
the
knuckles.
Stars and the patterns and all that. Remember that well.
Very relaxing. Very relaxing. I mean, it's like you're massaging your eyeballs as well.
Yeah.
It's lovely. You can simulate, you get the same effect. If you flash lights, I mean, if you, for instance, you're on a train and you go through a woods at sunset, and the light is shining through the forest, but as the train is moving fast, it's creating a flickering on your face. You start getting these, that's when they discovered it, you know, that's what that does. Oh, that's cool. Let's see if, they discovered it in the 1800s and, they created this machine that would that had slots in it, and it would spin round like a kind of lampshade, and they would spin round. So flashing lights on the eyes, flashing lights on the lasers on meridian points. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been there, done that, doing that stuff. Very good, very good. So, but here's the thing, though. Here's my big, you know, the test of any healing device. How is it with PTSD at releasing the frozen emotions of PTSD?
Right. Now, there are machines out there. I mean, it's very good for it, right? Now, there's a machine there. In fact, the machine that Nikki uses, right, the eLibra. Now, the eLibra is a very, very... It's fantastic for... emotional problems like PTSD PTSD and other forms of clinical depression. It is wonderful for that. In fact, I went under the eLibra 9 recently. I'll just tell you this story. Now what had happened was that it's not like you hold the rods of this one, right, or hold pardon the expression, but big massive golden balls, you know. You put your fingers into this sort of receptacle and you relax, and then what will happen is you're asked a question. So basically you'd ask to think about what the most traumatic experience that you've ever had. So in recent years, I mean, apart from, the diagnosis and that I had was the loss of my father, right? I mean, that was really, I mean, as you could imagine, that was very emotional, very stressful, and it was because we were very close. Now, any time I always thought about the time when he died, I used to get quite, you know, I'd well up a little bit and feel a bit emotional. So I was doing that, I was actually feeling these feelings, you know, it's like when you're doing the, you're just trying to, you're visualizing it, so you're feeling these emotions, you're getting into that frequency. And he's, you know, the guy had said to me, right, now, I want you to tell me how you're feeling. What do you see? So I'm imagining walking into the bedroom and I'm seeing my father lying there, my mother upset, and I can smell everything. I can, you know, all the atmosphere, I can feel it. Now, just after that, he says, now I want you to get rid of these thoughts, get rid of them, right? And just let it go right out through your fingers, through your toes, everywhere. And he says, and I want you to relax and try and forget about that, right? Now, all I did was typed a few things in, and he says, now I want you to go back and try and think of that again. When I tried, I walked into the bedroom where my father was. My father was gone. He was gone, he wasn't there. And my mum was just standing there smiling. Now that, he actually changed the frequencies, right? To stop me from thinking. So there were certain neurons not firing, right? Right? So the kind of negative frequencies that caused these emotions had completely disappeared, and they're still gone to this day.
This is so fascinating, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating.
So, yes. Because, you know, one of the things that the world is suffering from is PTSD. On a global level, multiple levels, creating multiple problems that are creating multiple cluster fun. You know, it just gets more and more complex. It's getting more and more like a kind of steel Brillo pad all the time. And we're trying to untie these without, you know, doing too much destruction. But anyway, so... Going back to your communication with the animals and what they're saying to you, have they given you, I mean, are they just saying, oh, help us, or do they know what they need you to do for them?
Yes.
Are they really clear about it? Like, you know, is there a kind of zeitgeist that is talking through all of them? To you, you know, like an overarching soul consciousness that lays behind all the souls of all these creatures.
No, not really. Or if there is, I'm not communicating with it. I communicate on a collective, really, and what they want us to do is really to love. I think that's the biggest lesson that they want to teach us, is about unconditional love and forgiveness. I mean, animals hold trauma just as we do into their systems. I'll give you just a small example. Obviously, do the bioresonance on the animals now. We actually do it through hair samples. We can do it through hair samples, saliva, feathers, you know, just send us a witness of the patient, and we can do it that way. My dog, Annie, she spent the first 4 years of her life in kennels. She was an ex-racing dog. And she's been with me for 9 years now. And just one of the emotional imbalances that picked up in her bioresonance energy was the fear of never finding love. And it was such an eye-opener, you know, because I kind of sort of, it immediately she tuned in and showed me when she was sort of sitting in those kennels, and she's not sitting there thinking the human words, but she's feeling those feelings, you know. She had no love really in those 4 years at all. And it's just amazing how much of these traumas just stay lodged within the system, within the body, and how important it is through bioresonance to get them shifted, to get them, like with Mike's experience, you know. So you can actually sort of go back in and get your whole vibration and frequency back into a positive frequency. I mean, a very interesting, going back to insects, I keep coming back to insects, I'm sorry, but...
don't apologise, it's fascinating, because we don't think about, you know, does that insect care about what I'm thinking, you know, does the insect have any rights at all? No.
Insects have a really important mission, I mean, let's take the locust, I think the locust is one of the most... misunderstood insects of the world today. They have been put on the planet as nature's dustmen. Their job is to go and clear all the diseased crops and plants from the world. Now, what the farmers are doing is they're going, oh, look, the locusts have eaten our crops, we better put some pesticides on it. But what many people don't know about a locust is a locust can detect an unhealthy plant from over 100 miles away. It will detect its frequency and it will only be attracted to an unhealthy negative frequency that that plant is giving. Now, again, with the fulvic acid formulas that we're using now, the farmers over in America, they put half fulvic acid on half their crop and pesticide on the other half of the crop. And the locust left the crop, the healthy crop, alone and went and ate the disease crop. And then the farmers are going, well, these pesticides aren't working. Let's put some stronger ones down. They must be getting resistant to it. So I often use this story when I'm trying to teach people about bioresonance and frequency medicine, energetic medicine. Again, if we look at the shamanistic doctors of the world, you know, in the tribes, they would meditate, visualize. A patient would come to them with a mental or a physical disorder. They would go into meditation, tune in, and they would ask the spirit of the plant that was needed to heal this condition to come forward to them. And they woke from their meditation, they would go out into the forest and find this plant. And then they would take the plant themselves, so they got into the frequency needed to be an amazing practitioner to heal their patient. Now, I don't know many allopathic doctors who would take the medicine that they're handing out, right? It's just fascinating, you know, to look at. I mean, the thing I'm totally fascinated with bioresonance is the frequencies of the plants, the flower remedies and the herbs.
I was just going to start talking about Edward Bach, or Bach, and how he used to go do exactly that. I mean, he did the whole shaman thing, but experimenting on himself, grafting the energy onto his body, seeing what it did to him, making notes. Oh, this one made my poo go brown and green, you know. Oh, thank you. But, you know, and, you know, just really did the whole Victorian thing about the whole thing. And brilliant. And, went through all of these things. And he was a very sensitive man. But didn't one of them nearly kill him?
Yes, I mean, there are some poisonous plants out there, so. Yeah. You know, we need to learn and study which one's good for us and which ones aren't. But the frequencies, obviously, of these plants. When I look up some of the remedies and the frequencies that go are programmed into these pendants, you've got some incredible things like from dolphin plasma, frequencies from dolphin plasma It's just amazing, you know, and poisonous plants and poisonous metals and everything, but those are the particular frequencies needed to balance out that particular imbalance that we found in the animal. It just totally fascinates me. I absolutely love it. I mean, I take all of the medicines that I hand out. So I'm in the frequency to, I take folic acid, I'm on the bioresonance, and I eat very healthy, clean food, as healthy as things I can. So I can get into that vibration and that frequency to be able to help my patients get into that frequency as well.
Yeah.
Very good. Very shamanic. Mick?
Yeah, it's like the, like a lot of the pharmaceutical drugs, for example. I mean, what people are not realizing, it's not that they don't want to raise their vibration. It's like the pharmaceutical drugs are blocking the frequencies, you know, because obviously when you take away a symptom or a group of symptoms, now a symptom is a cellular scream, really. So it's basically saying, you know, right, there's something wrong here, you know. So we, as a naturopath, you want to get to the root cause of the problem, right? You want to listen out for that cellular scream, find out where it is and get to the root cause of it. Now, the pharmaceutical drugs take away the cellular scream, so we don't know the cause of it. So basically, that's blocking the frequencies, right, that are actually...
They mask it with a kind of white noise.
Exactly.
Interesting. And again, like, we're doing the same thing, the three of us doing different levels. Because I do this on a personality level and sometimes on a soul level. And it's always, you know, it's the same thing. It's being able to reintegrate a frequency that you couldn't integrate at the time. Yeah. So how do you... Oh man, there's a question that keeps coming back to me that I want to talk about. Mm-hmm. Two questions. One question. Sasquatch.
Sasquatch. Right.
Nikki, have you ever had any contact with non-monkey, large humanoid hairies? Or, you know, because these, I'm pretty convinced that they exist.
You know. Tonight, you'll see loads of them.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying.
Now you've opened my mind to them. I'm going to go and look at them. To be honest, I've not come across those yet.
No. All right, because you know, there are lots of different kinds of people. You know, and I sincerely believe that what people call Sasquatch are people. They're not animals. They're not a low consciousness. They've got a higher. Dimensional consciousness. And they have a sense of humor that is really quite funny. And it's you know, they make fart jokes just like every human. It's just like everybody loves a fart joke. I'm sorry, it just goes. A lot of women go, oh no, he's gone all to the fart. But it's a universal humor. No matter what country you come from, you'll laugh at a fart joke. It just kind of relieves the tension somehow.
Yeah.
It's just they don't seem to laugh at farts though, do they? They just let them out and look happy with themselves.
Yeah. It's a result. It's relief and you didn't boo yourself. and these days, tell you, at my age, you know, that is an achievement. So, maybe that was TMI. Anyway, meanwhile, back at TMI City. Oh, this is a fascinating conversation. So, there's Sasquatch. What was that? There was now, there's another question that is kind of, it's like it's masked. I can't quite get to it. But anyway, we've got about 20 minutes left. Fascinating conversation, and thank you very much, Mick, and Nikki for coming on. Back to PTSD, and there are vibrational ways, literally vibrating the body.
Yeah.
To release the locked-in tensions of PTSD. Let's just go around and talk about what are the techniques that you use, Mick and Nikki, do you talk to people? What's your approach to the whole idea?
Well, I'll give you an example. There was someone who I went down south last year, and there was a girl who was so badly depressed. She was busting into tears all the time. And she had her kids along with her. You know, she asked if you didn't mind if her kids came and sat in the session. So we said no problem, you know. And so we were giving her the treatment. And she was on the third cycle of the laser acupuncture. Now this girl was so sad, and she wept for the world, she said. And it got to the stage where everything that's going on, you know, she talked about the chemtrails, she talked about, you know, unnecessary wars, famine, death, pestilence, everything. You know, everything that's going on in the world, she was just in despair about it, right? So as you said earlier on, it was, you know, that's the PTSD, just what's happening in the world. Now, when she was talking about it, she was in tears. So we scanned her and we knew that it showed up that there was our neurotransmitters weren't firing properly, and it just showed up it was clinical depression. And it was chronic. It really was bad. Now, on the third cycle of the laser acupuncture, she all of a sudden started laughing. Right? And our kids just looked at us and said, "Mum, is that you? You're laughing. You haven't laughed in such a long time." And this was a success story, a good one, because it was overnight. I actually gave her a top-up treatment the following day, and she's doing so well now. She really is doing so well. And that was luckily, that was one treatment.
So was there a story with that? Did she say why she started laughing, or is it just like boom, that's it and
it
gone?
It was just all of a sudden. She says, "I don't know. She, I just felt this kind of euphoria," and she says, "I've been trying to feel like that. You know, just try to snap out of it." She had listened to all sorts of tapes on NLP, read books, and I says, "Well, it's all very well to read the books and listen to the tapes, right? But you really have to get into the vibration. You have to feel it." And I think I know that's what happened, was that when these frequencies, because the program basically said, this is how she should be, you know, this is the frequencies that all her organs at a cellular level should be vibrating at, and it sent these frequencies in. Now, I think there's obviously you do get the placebo and the nocebo effects, right? Now, I do believe that if you really, it's like even when an allopath turns around and gives you a placebo, right, or gives you any drug, look at you're talking about depression, so I mean, you look at psychotropic drugs and how they don't really work, right? You know, there's no physiological changes apart from negative ones with psychotropic drugs. However, when people believe that that doctor is going to help them with the drug he's giving them, then the placebo effect kicks in and they really believe it. And I think that she really wanted this to help her. And there was a part of that, and that's why she obviously felt that euphoria. It kind of works both ways, because it was sending in these positive frequencies to her. She was feeling it. She was very sensitive to it. And, you know, and all of a sudden she just started to feel much better, you know. So now she's holding down her work. I mean, you got to understand, this girl was, because of what was happening in the world, she was wanting to take her kid's life. You know, that's how bad it was. You know, that's how she says she would never do it, but that's how she felt. That she didn't want her children to live in this world. You know, so it was quite an emotional time. even for us, you know, actually hearing all this.
But, oh, I bet. So this is the result of using a Rife type frequency through the laser acupuncture, yeah? Megahertz through a laser.
Yeah.
Through a laser. Okay, good. You see, I'm looking at all ways of dealing with PTSD, because I believe that very soon we're going to need all of the people who can do this plus times 10. You're going to need to train people how to use these machines, how to help people quickly move through what was a terrible, terrible thing in their lives. And I think it's going to happen to a vast number of people.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, what I've been finding is with emotional problems, the bioresonance is very successful. And we get all the best results are with emotional problems. Chronic disease, on the other hand, because it's stress related. A lot of the times the chronic disease is drug related because of the drugs that the allopaths are actually giving people and prescribing to them. But with chronic disease, sometimes the treatment is a bit longer because the body has taken a right battering, basically, the likes of the allopathic treatments. And it's something, just to touch on something you mentioned about how everyone should, you know, we should give as many naturopaths there as possible. Now there's room. I mean, in Ayurveda, all your holistic therapists, as well as the allopaths, because it's medicine itself and healing is huge. It's absolutely huge. It's not, but people believe that the allopath is the only person that practices medicine. You know, allopathic reductionism is only really, 110 years old? You know, they've had the monopoly for 110 years after the Flexner report, you know, because, again, it was like, you call them the shapeshifters, do you know what I mean? Your Rockefeller and your Carnegies, that basically got all these medical schools, got them the funding, and that was it. And they all of a sudden, they became the kings of medicine. And people were brainwashed into basically subcontracting their health to a GP. Now, when someone comes to me, or someone, you know, goes to Nikki with a dog, or a cat or whatever, the dog is sending the message to Nikki. Correct me if I'm wrong, Nikki. You know, it's basically communicating with Nikki, but it's healing itself. There is a self-healing going on in there, and it's the same with the human being. You know, it's like the body heals itself. A naturopath or a holistic therapist will step back and give the raw materials for the body what it needs to heal itself, right? And Bill, you talked about communicating. Now, when we communicate with a client or a patient, I'll just say briefly again, Matt, there was someone who spoke to me about a thyroid problem that they had, and they've had it for 19 years. So I explained that it was, the minerals that they needed and certain lifestyle changes that I had to make. And he actually says to me, he sees the 19 seconds that it took for you to tell me what I needed is more than what my GP's told me in 19 years.
Thank you. That's exactly right. So thanks, Mick. And Nikki.
Yes.
Just, you know, we've got about 4 minutes left to the rest of the show. I'd like you to tell people how to find you, and what you offer, and maybe you can come on the show. As I just planted a video, I'd like you to have a listen to it, if you feel drawn to, I'd like you to join the next one, because you sound like an excellent addition to that, that little round table there.
Yeah, well, I would love to, because I mean I've done quite a few radio and TV slots and things in my time, but I have to say I've enjoyed this one the most, because I'm talking to intelligent people and awake people, and I've actually felt very comfortable to be able to express myself, absolutely the truth of myself.
Yeah, you're among family, it's all right.
Myself, so thank you. I would love to join any circle that you had on there.
Excellent, excellent.
But yes, how people can find me, you've got the Canine Angel site, which is canineangel.co.uk. That's C-A-N-I-N-E and then angel.co.uk. We have nikki-brown.co.uk. That's more for sort of the human and animal kind of work that I do. And then there's natural fulvic vitality. .co.uk for the fulvic solutions, for the mineral solutions for people, plants, soils and animals. But I mean the animals, I think, would just like to give me a message, or give a message out to anybody that may be listening, and that is, please connect with your heart and just give out love. And when you see a distressing animal video or news item on Facebook, instead of getting angry about it, could you please send your love vibrations to the situation only, rather than negativity and hate, because that's not actually doing anybody any good. They just say, send us love, send us your light, and things will change for the better for us, which they are.
Thank you so much, yeah. Nikki. Nikki Brown?
Absolutely.
Mick Daly, Mickey Daly, Nikki and Mickey, no. Nikki and Mickey and JP. It's been lovely. Nikki, also check out, one of the members of the roundtable, Shari Edwards, is, she's the go-to gal for frequency. If you've never heard of her, you'll be, bathed in a luxuriating, nourishing soup if you listen to her.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Just absorb, I mean, she's got a lovely voice as well, so it really comes across lovely, you know. And yeah, so this has been a lovely journey. This is Journeys with JP on Revolution Radio, a listener supported station. And don't forget the seed pack and the silver. If you buy silver from Revolution Radio, it will appreciate in price. Well, if you buy silver anyway, you'll appreciate in price, but if you buy from us, you'll support the station as well. Thank you very much. Good night. This has been JP. Over and out.